Exodus chapter 1. So we had our introduction to Exodus last week, and I want to direct your attention to the key verse from last week. It's not up on your screen. We're going to start with verse 8 this morning, but don't forget verse 7. Verse 7 was the verse that we focused on and said, this is our connection verse. This shows us our connection in the book of Exodus back to the book of Genesis. This shows us the connection of the whole Bible to the mission of God, which is rooted. It's in the DNA of creation, that God be glorified, that salvation and redemption be applied to the creation which fell. And so here in verse 7, we're reminded that the sons of Israel now are exhibiting a level of obedience to the creation mandate by being fruitful and increasing greatly and multiplying and becoming exceedingly mighty, so that the land was filled with them. And so we'll pick up Exodus in verse 8. Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. He said to his people, behold, the people of the sons of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal wisely with them, or else they will multiply, and in the event of war, they will also join themselves to those who hate us and fight against us and depart from the land. So they appointed taskmasters over them to afflict them with hard labor, and they built for Pharaoh storage cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and the more they spread out, so that they were in dread of the sons of Israel. Note that verse. Again, connect it to verse 7. The Egyptians compelled the sons of Israel to labor rigorously, and they made their lives bitter with hard labor in mortar and bricks and at all kinds of labor in the field, all their labors which they rigorously imposed on them. Then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shiphrah, and the other was named Puah. Now those are great, great biblical names to name children, just if you're curious. And he said, when you are helping the Hebrew women to give birth and see them upon the birth stool, if it is a son, then you shall put him to death. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt had commanded them, but let the boys live. So the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said to them, why have you done this thing and let the boys live? The midwives said to Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwife can get to them. So God was good to the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very mighty. Again, note that verse and connect it with verse 12 and verse 7. Because the midwives feared God, he established households for them. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, every son who is born, you are to cast into the Nile, and every daughter you are to keep alive. Now, like any good book, we begin to be introduced to the protagonists, to the heroes, to the characters in the book. And as we look at this book, we want to identify the main characters. Who are the main characters? And you might say the main characters in this book would be, or at least in the first section, this section in Egypt, would be Pharaoh and Moses. And that would be a good guess. It would be you can make a good case for that. You also might say that the protagonists are Pharaoh and Israel. And again, you can make a good case for that. But I think what you want to see here in the book of Exodus is that the story is not pitting Moses against Pharaoh or even the nation of Israel against Pharaoh, but it is pitting God against Pharaoh. So this story is a story of Pharaoh elevating himself up to the place of a god. And this was a very common idea in the ancient world. The Egyptians, like the Romans, ascribed some sense or place of deity to their kings. They said, our kings are our gods. And the kings often acted as if they were God. And so here you have this pitting against the purposes of God, this person, unnamed, by the way, Pharaoh. And that's a fascinating point that we want to note. There is lots of controversy in scholarship about who this Pharaoh is. Who is he? And there's lots of commentary and lots of discussion. And here's what you need to note, that the Bible doesn't list his name, and it doesn't list his name purposely, in my mind. It's a disrespectful gesture. It's just the Pharaoh. Now, in this story, that's especially poignant because we have two people who are named in this story. It's the only place they're named. They're not women of renown, so to speak. They're just two regular, oddly named women, Shifra and Pua. So this is a remarkable thing as you read this first account, that this historical regent, this figure who called himself God, this personage who, as we look at the nation of Egypt as that from that time, probably participated in some of these massive construction projects, which have now lasted for centuries and are the source of tourism and pictures, and you all know about it. The pyramids and the sphinxes and all of those magnificent achievements of the pharaohs. But here in the Exodus story, it's just the king Pharaoh. Don't even name him. Don't even tell people what his name is. It's just the Pharaoh. In opposition to that, you've got the key women, Shifra and Pua. Now, you shouldn't miss this. I think this is where everybody kind of gets distracted. We're searching high and low to try and figure out who this Pharaoh is when the text is basically telling us it doesn't matter who he is. And because he's opposed to God, he may as well be forgotten. Now, that's a powerful statement here in this first chapter. It makes me smile, laugh, and chuckle. It's like you think you're all that. In reality, you don't even match up to these two godly midwives. And their names are etched in the book. Your name might be etched on some piece of stone in the desert. And we might actually say, wow, wow, wow. But these women are etched in the heart and on the palms of God. And that is worth noting this morning. That is an essential part of this story that we need to find out. So what we have here is the protagonists are introduced to us, Pharaoh and God. And Israel here is pitched in obedience to God as they work to fulfill the creation mandate to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. There are two attempts in this story on the part of Pharaoh to work against the purposes of God. There are two ways in which Pharaoh opposes the mandate and the obedience of Israel in fulfilling their mandate. The first one is forced labor. He forced labor upon them, and he increased that labor. He saw that they were flourishing. He saw that they were becoming strong. And so he said, well, good for me. I get more work out of strong people, but I don't want them too strong. So I'm going to pile it on. So they have no strength other than to work. Because if I don't do this, they become a threat to the nation. So He puts forced labor on them. Now, I want to note verse 12, and I want you to note verse 12, because I'm going to show you that these verses 7, 12, and 20 are the pegs on which we need to hang our understanding of what's being said to us here. So verse 7, as we mentioned, is an almost word-for-word fulfillment of the great creation mandate from Genesis chapter 1 and verse 28. Verse 12 has a little bit of that flavor in it. So now as Pharaoh turns the screws on the people of God, as he opposes God by attacking his people, this is what the text tells us. They were, the more they afflicted them, the more the Egyptians afflicted the Israelites, the more the Israelites multiplied, and the more they spread out, so that they were in dread of the sons of Israel. Again, the opposition of Pharaoh to God is thwarted, and God's purposes will be fulfilled. Now, when you encounter suffering in your life, you need to be mindful of this principle. If God be for us, who can be against us? When things feel overwhelming, remember, God is on your side. And the message of Exodus is that God is sovereign, and God will accomplish His purposes. And we're not far from the story of Joseph, right? We mentioned that last week as well, where Joseph was totally confused, totally destroyed. His family sent him away. He was isolated and abandoned, and yet God worked it for good. And here we have a repetition of that principle. The more they afflicted them, the more God blessed them. And we have to discern in our lives the difference between affliction that is intended for discipline and affliction that is intended to derail us from God's purpose. And this is part of the faith journey. A synonym for faith would be perseverance. That I persevere, that I endure to the end. And Jesus said, the one who endures to the end will be saved. And it's stories and verses like this that we need to pitch our tent onto, that we need to kind of put a peg onto and hold on to it as we ascend the hill of life and deal with challenges in our lives, big and small. The second attempt on the part of Pharaoh to undermine the plan of God is genocide. They keep growing. They keep getting stronger. At some point, their value is now diminished in light of the risk that they bring. So, let's just get rid of them. Let's keep them from growing beyond this. And we'll use them as much as we can, but we can't let this identity and this strength grow. So he attempts genocide. And that is where the midwives come in. The midwives come into the story here at this attempt on the part of Pharaoh to kill the nation of Israel. The midwives in this story give us a picture of what it means to be obedient. They portray for us an example of obedience to God and His commands, no matter what the opposition. And it also gives us a picture of God's blessing of the obedient. And so here you have, kind of as the exemplars of the whole book, it's as if He's saying, listen, if you want the blessing of God, note Shifra and Puah. Take note of them. So what do we want to notice about these two women? And this is why I asked Vince the question I asked him. Is because God uses normal people. Regular people. And God makes them spectacular. But they were just doing their job. I mean, really, if you look at it, what were they doing? All they were doing was their job. They helped women bear children. And they continued to do that. They continued to do that right through the command to not do it. They said, as the apostles in Acts later would say, it is better for us to obey God than man. Now, when man mimics God's laws, when obeying man is the equivalent of obeying God, then we can say we obey men. But when those two things become opposites, when obeying men becomes disobeying God, the scriptures tell us that we must obey God rather than men. And that's what these two women do. And that's all they do. Now, I don't want to minimize their work, the danger that they encountered with their work, But I do want you to see that all they did was their job. That's it. It wasn't anything spectacularly remarkable, anything that they weren't used to. It was just the additional danger and threat that came into it. But not, and again, I don't want to diminish that. That's significant. But all they did was keep their eyes to the plow and do their job. And God blessed it. Now that's a remarkable, remarkable biblical truth. It's highlighted again, and I'll repeat it, by the nameless Pharaoh and the named midwives. Just that one feature here tells you something really significant. If this was a book of history, you'd get an F for that detail. Why are you telling me the guard's name? I want to know the commander's name. Right? Why are you telling me the private's name? I want to know the general's name. If I'm writing a book of history, I want to know which pharaoh this is. It doesn't matter the names of the Hebrew midwives. It's only just two Hebrew midwives. Right? But again, you need to remember, this isn't simply a book of history. We're not turning to the Bible to look for historical details. We're looking to the book to see what God is interested in. And at this incredibly unique historical moment, these two ordinary women are highlighted by God. These are the ones I want you to pay attention to. And I want you to pay attention to Pharaoh. I don't care about him. It's these two women I want you to pay attention to. And here are their names. By the way, their names mean splendor and beauty. Splendor and beauty. It reminds me, ladies, of that verse from 1 Peter, right? Where Peter talks to the woman who has an unbelieving husband. And he says to her, I want you to win him by your behavior. And I don't want you to focus on the outer adornment. I want you to focus on that inner person. I want you to focus on obedience. It's that obedient heart that is the beauty that will bring someone to me. Now, I think you women are beautiful on the outside too. And that's a good thing. I like women. That's what I tell my boys when they were growing up, when they had that first kiss and we're kind of going, hey, be careful. I'm glad you like women. It's a good thing. But remember, there's a focus in our culture on the outward only. And there's a focus in the scriptures on the full person, on the outside and the inside. And God has created you to be a beauty and a work of splendor. And you need to focus on developing that inner person and being faithful. And men, that's our call too. We don't skate that way. The scriptures have words about that for us too. And we need not be enamored of the outward appearance of our own being, our strength, our prowess, our power. We need to find our strength somewhere else, right? Our strength is a strength that comes from God. And so maybe Psalm 51:6 is good, where we're told that God desires truth in the innermost being. And the hidden part, you will make me know wisdom. So the key verse in this next section is verse 20. So God was good to the midwives. And listen to how God expressed blessing. It's not just personal, but it's universal. God was good to the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very mighty. Again, that Genesis creation mandate reference. And then verse 21, because the midwives feared God, he established households for them. He blessed them too. The blessing came from obedience. The third thing I want you to notice as we kind of finish up this brief look at chapter 1 is that water is introduced here as an instrument of judgment. Now, the Nile was the centerpiece of the nation and is the centerpiece of the nation of Egypt. It is their biggest resource. And it is a barometer of whether things in Egypt are going well or poorly. The Nile in Egypt is emblematic of life and of blessing. And the fluctuations of the Nile were emblematic of the Egyptian belief that the gods were being gracious to them or being punishing towards them. Using the Nile as this instrument of death here in this passage would also have been an appeal on the part of the Egyptians to the gods to bless them. They would have seen it as some sort of sacrifice made to the gods. We'll give these children to the Nile. In contradiction to the purpose of water, which is to give life, to cleanse, Pharaoh perverts it as a tool of death. And so we need to be mindful of this as well, that there is a potential to use good things for evil. The church has even been guilty of this. The book of Exodus is a movement up from Genesis. Genesis is tribal. You have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the people and their enemies are their equivalents. There are other tribes. In the book of Exodus, we move up. The nation of Israel doesn't, but we move up into a context where the opponent of Israel has been now increased exponentially. It's not just tribes. It's the empire of Egypt. And here in this passage, in this book, we're going to see this usage of water as a sign of power and judgment. So here the Pharaoh tries to kill the nation of Israel using the source of life, water. Later, God will destroy the Pharaoh with water. It's a great, great setup. There's some foreshadowing going on here that you want to be aware of. In Exodus, we have the disparity of the tribe of Israel swallowed up by the nation, the empire of Egypt. And I want us to end with this focus. You see that disparity? It's the big guy versus the little guy. It's kind of a David and Goliath story. You have Egypt and the slaves of Israel. And God battles on their behalf. And in this book of Exodus, we're introduced to the crazy notion that people shouldn't trust in chariots. So Isaiah recalls this idea when he says, "Woe to those who go down to Egypt for help and rely on horses and trust in chariots because they are many and in horsemen because they are very strong, but they do not look to the Holy One of Israel nor seek the Lord." And here the nation of Israel is in a spot where they cannot seek the chariots of Egypt, they're in opposition to them. They have only one response, to choose the Lord. So the question I want to end with is, can the world be changed with modern shifras and puas? Through simple obedience in your birthing room, can God change the world? It's through simple obedience in your workshop, in your classroom, in your home, on your job, can God change the world? Does He need superstars? Does He need Christian presidents and kings? Or does He just need you to be obedient where you are? And I'm going to say, He just needs you to be obedient where you are. He doesn't need a Christian president. He doesn't need a Christian prime minister. He doesn't need a Christian UN. He doesn't need any of that. He needs you to be obedient where He placed you, as no one else but you. That's it. If more Christians grabbed a hold of this, we could change the world again. God's will is fleshed out not in divining His will by discovering some mysterious vision or insight, but God's will is fleshed out in simple acts of obedience right where you are, which is why it's great that Vince was here with us this morning and why I asked him that question. And he should think of himself as remarkable, but he's just a normal Joe, just like I'm a normal Joe, just like you're a normal Joe or Josephine, just a normal guy who wants to be obedient to Christ where He planted him. That's it. And if every believer was obedient in that way, again, we could be marked as a Shiphrah and a Puah. So what is it? What is it that you're doing right now that you need to continue to do? Some simple act of obedience that needs to be repeated over and over and over again. Adopting an abused child and dedicating the next several decades of your life to raising that child like Jan Taylor did, and we're going to dedicate that little girl in the second service. Moving to Mexico with your wife and plugging in and just doing what God wants you to do there. Rising early and driving to work and working as unto the Lord and not for men every day, faithfully. Maybe that's it. Making lunch for your child as they go off to school and praying regularly for them that they be brought up in the nurture of Christ. That's a Shiphrah moment. That's Shiphrah obedience. Saying hi to that miserable, no-good neighbor of yours, praying for them, asking God to show you a way to care for them. Hosting a Grove group in your home, putting up with dirty feet and people who overstay their welcome. Heading over to that widow's house with a rake to do work in the yard that you could do at home. Teaching a Sunday school class where those kids seemingly learn nothing and make you want to pull your hair out. Arriving at church at 7 and staying till 12:30, singing the same songs over and over. Being available to watch kids in the nursery even when there are none to watch. Then when there are so many, you want to scream. Does any of this make any difference? It does. The answer is yes. When God is orchestrating all of the different parts for His glory, Shiphrah and Puah rise above the pharaohs of this world when God is on their side. And you need to remember that. If God be for us, who can be against us? The lesson here for the normal believer is to be obedient and faithful in little things and in big things. And this is where you find blessing, righteousness. God uses the little things. Last week I referenced Hebrews chapter 11 as our New Testament connection point to the book of Exodus, that we have so great a cloud of witnesses who are watching. Therefore, we should run the race with endurance and take off anything that encumbers us to accomplish this mission. Today, I want you to turn to Romans 12, verses 1 through 3. It says this, "Therefore, brethren, I urge you by the mercies of God to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect." And here is a verse that my brother Phil and I have been talking about for weeks, which is tied directly into Puah and Shiphrah. "For through the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think so as to have sound judgment, as God has allotted to each a measure of faith." Your place, your part in God's kingdom, who God made you to be, is an act of the sovereign God. And He says, all I want you to do is be obedient. For the believer, success is simple obedience. Father in heaven, help us to not be enamored with something other than what you've made us. And help us in each of our places to be faithful and obedient. And I thank you, Lord, for the opportunities we have to be faithful and obedient. We pray this in your Son's name. Amen.